There we go. Sitting by the Christmas tree. Very yes. pleasant. Oh my. It's mostly a Star Trek tree with like a bit of Disney and Star Wars.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I see Gandalf.
The best ornament is the Shuttlecraft Galileo ornament.
Yeah, that's the classic, right? How long have we had that ornament?
It was Dad's. I can remember when we were kids. But yeah, it's got like Spock, like Shuttlecraft.
Here, go grab and push it for the recorder.
I don't want to bring it over here.
Oh, here, you can take the recorder with you. It's fancy. Portable.
Here, guys, we're going to listen to this vintage Shuttlecraft Galileo thing.
Shuttlecraft to Enterprise. Shuttlecraft to Enterprise. Spock here. Happy holidays.
Now, we all know that.
Oh, come on, you cut it off.
I didn't mean to.
Yeah, you don't have that memorized?
I don't know. I got excited. I was going to say a funny thing, and now it's passed.
You're going to talk about how we've been saying happy holidays for a long time?
Something about how Spock doesn't really celebrate holidays as a Vulcan. Well, they probably have their own holidays. They're probably
I'm sure,
weird.
I'm sure there's like Vulcan-ness.
They probably like meditate. One time he gave Kirk a gift of Wrath of Khan. It was just a book. It was Tale of Two Cities. Like, that was a public domain by now. Tell Two Cities in that year or whatever. Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for December 3rd. I got a buzz. December 3rd. 2015.
How is that possible?
I guess for some reason I panicked. I was like,
how is that possible?
I got turned off by my phone.
You had more time to think about it.
All right, so yeah, but it scrambled my brains. Hey, everyone, welcome. So this is our first December show. Closest show to my, well, I guess the next one will be technically a little closer, but close yes. to my birthday. Birthday's coming up. That's always fun. I'm always obnoxious about that.
We know.
We're getting the month of Christmas, the month of Star Wars. It's good times. It's a slow time of the year for the game industry. This is the best month.
2 weeks from today, we're seeing Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah. Really.
No.
Yes. 2 weeks today.
14. And math adds up.
So wow. Guess what our show will be about 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. Might have to record on Wednesday just because.
No, we'll record on Friday so we can talk about the movie.
I keep thinking it's Tuesday.
God. You are a dummy.
All right, I'm a bit out of it. All right, so a couple weeks ago, we didn't do a show last week because, you know, for
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. But a couple weeks ago, the Super Nintendo turned 25 years old in it originally released in Japan. It came out in 91 here. In 1990, November 20 or 8th, 3rd, 1st or whatever it was, something like that, around then. Everything in Nintendo happens like around that 21st mark.
Yeah.
Like their systems always come out then. Like their big games always do. Like, yeah. Like, it's weird. Anyways, but yeah. So we thought we'd talk about Super Nintendo / Super Famicom, whatever you want to call it. What's it called in Europe? Just Super Nintendo, right?
I think so.
It's weird how the Genesis was the Mega Drive there, right?
Yeah. I don't know where that came from.
What a worse name than Genesis. Right. But Europe was, like, the one place where, like, Sega definitely won the console war, right? Like, everybody, like...
I know the Master System did. The Mega Drive?
I think the Mega Drive was... Yeah, no, because of that, Sega was just very popular in Europe.
Weird.
Right? So, okay, so, yeah. So, Super Nintendo. AJ, is the Super Nintendo the best system ever? Just throwing it out there.
After the fact, probably.
It's definitely... You'd be stupid to not say it's in the conversation.
At the time, I would have told you you're a dirty scumbag and you should play more Sonic the Hedgehog.
Right, but when you look back at it, just the game library, and I just don't want to like whittle off games here because we're going to talk about it, but just like the amount of exclusive classics for that thing is ridiculous. And a lot of them were just Nintendo. Nintendo's like first party support was insane at this point. Because a lot of their franchises were kind of like at their stride. Like, this is when they, like, had 2D gaming figured out.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, a lot of that stuff. And then they also, like, you know, a lot of spin-offs and beginnings of great franchises are starting here. So it was pretty crazy. So, you know, the launch games for the Super Nintendo, I think in Japan that was just Mario and F-Zero or something. And the Pilotwings also somewhere around there. It was, like, down to the three earliest ones. Mm-hmm. What do you think about Super Mario World? Is that still... What does that hold up in the Mario
canon? That's still my favorite. 2D Mario game.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, easily my favorite 2D Mario game. I know some people would say 3 sometimes, but I like
World. I used to be on that camp, and I replayed them a few years ago, and I was like, yeah, Super Mario World's better.
I just like, I mean, you know, it may, maybe if for no other reason, I mean, look, they're both so similar. And look, Super Mario World has better graphics. It just does.
And it has Yoshi.
And has Yoshi. Yeah. I think I like the music a little bit better, but just like small things.
3 is also it's harder. Amazing. That game, in every regard, even graphically, holds up.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. It is. It's like, there's something, yeah, it's almost, I mean, there are
games released today that look not as good as Super Mario World to me.
Right, yeah, they were kind of firing on all cylinders pretty early there. It's weird, because even though the Genesis and the Super Nintendo, like, Genesis actually came out a couple years earlier, Sonic came out when the Super Nintendo came out, so, right. Like, right when this game did, too. Yeah, so that's crazy. But, you know, and then Pilot Wings and F-Zero, I was always bad, because I never knew you were supposed to use the L and R buttons to, like,
oh, really? Turn you into never things. Knew that?
I was always
oh,
you should ask me. I don't know, I just, you were probably beating me and happy about it.
Yeah, well, very much so.
So I was just bad at F-Zero.
That was just crazy, because you've never seen a game, like a racing game portrayed right. that way before, especially on a home console. Oh, no.
Before that, racing games were like Rad Racer or RC Pro-Am, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, that was like, that was, honestly, always, that was kind of the beginning of the modern racing game. I still feel like today, yeah, most racing like, games are like, kind of like that. In those racing games,
you never had a sense of a circuit,
right.
if that makes sense. Right, you're always sure. just kind of like barreling down a highway.
Right. Or if it was a circuit, it was like an isometric thing, like RC Pro-Am, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really, well, I think where that really comes together more to like maybe a more fun racing game is with Mario Kart.
Yeah, which really takes the same technology
right.
of F-Zero, but just kind of puts Mario.
It kind of slows it down a little bit and makes it a bit more manageable.
And adds the weapons.
And it makes it kind of fun. That's where that series began, Mario Kart. Which at that time was like, oh, this is like a fun little thing. And now it's like
Mario Kart. Big franchise.
Mario Kart's huge. There's always a Mario Kart game released on whatever system. So yeah, so Pilot Wings, I mean, I like Pilot Wings, but I was like 64. Back in the
day, I played a shit ton of Pilot Wings.
A whole ton. I played
64. See, at 64, more. I probably played more, but so again, it was like all we had at the time. Mm-hmm. Actually, it does occur to me, we got our Super Nintendo on your birthday that year.
Really? Yeah.
That's yeah. Because right. I actually went to bat for you because we found it in Mom's basement, and Chris was going to take it. He's like, do you think anyone mine? I was like, technically, that's Michael's.
Yeah, so I think I did like to remind people obnoxiously that the Super Nintendo was mine every once in a while. Even
that,
really
but see, I was fine with that as a kid because that meant I got the Sega.
The Sega
was mine.
Poor Chris. I mean, we all play. I mean, it didn't matter.
Chris was playing football or some dumb shit.
Yeah, there you go. So, and then the next thing, and this is kind of the point I bring up with the Super Nintendo, one reason why it's so great is that, to me, when I think of Nintendo, the first three franchises I think of are Mario, Zelda, Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
It has one of the best Mario games, and then you have A Link to the Past.
Which is still my favorite Zelda game.
It's not quite my favorite, but it's my favorite of the kind of, not 2D as well, but the top-down ones, you know what I mean? Maybe Link Between Worlds has kind of come along and been like the closest competitor.
Close second, yeah.
But yeah, Link to the Past was great, especially back then. That kind of scale.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, you know, you have, I mean, gameplay-wise, it's not too different from the original Zelda.
But it's just so much more refined.
Yeah, I don't know, the world just had a little bit more of a cohesion to it.
Right. And plus, it's one of the first times, too, where, like, you kind of had, like, the gimmick, which was, like, super, like, the light world, dark world thing.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, like, every Zelda game would have its kind of gimmick. I don't know if any of them have been quite as neat as that, still. You see, like, a lot of them just kind of do basically that same thing. Like, Twilight Princess had a Twilight World. And like, Between Worlds had low rule. That was, like, so cool. Like, you would, like, go between two worlds, and, like, the terrain would be slightly different. You would solve puzzles that way. And just, like, and again, just, like, the sense of exploration. Like, maybe you would find, like, this magic spell that you didn't need, but you had it, and it was cool. You can upgrade your sword. And it was just kind of fun walking around there. It wasn't easy to make a game epic back then, like it is now, where, you know, you could call almost every other game release an epic of some kind, you know?
Yeah, but that was definitely
right
the case of that one.
Right, especially, you know, like, leading up to, like, that final fight with Ganon and how awesome and intense that felt. But yeah, that was, like, for me, that was when I really fell in love with Zelda, even though he had pink hair for some reason in it. I don't know why in so many Super Nintendo games, when somebody's supposed to have blonde hair, they just made it pink. Because they did it with Terra in Final Fantasy VI
also.
Yeah,
I never understood that.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, well, we can't just make it blonde. Why not? You have that color.
You had quite a few. You used to advertise it.
I know that you have. Yeah. So, and then Super Metroid is,
I still think absolutely the best Metroid game. So
absolutely, it's hard just because Super Metroid. I mean, Metroid Prime is so good.
Super Metroid's better. It's not to take away from Metroid Prime.
Right.
Super Metroid's better in every way.
I think I do like it better, but it's maybe closer for me than to you. But Super Metroid, that might be the best Super Nintendo game.
Oh, I think so. I think so.
That game,
As far as you know, graphics and the detail, the sprites, it had all that going. But I think no game ever at that point, and for a long time after, could set a mood and a sense of world that game did.
Well, that was back then, there weren't a lot of games that could set mood very easily, because, you know, tools were limited.
And aside from that opening narration and that guy saying, the last Metroid is in captivity, like, no dialogue.
Right.
No, but like, no still anything. Like a story. Just the story was conveyed through the world and context, right. And that's what was amazing.
And it's cool how it was, like, Zelda, and there was like this exploration sense, but it was very different because it was all, you know, 2D.
It felt very visceral for some reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, the controls had a nice sense of weight to them. Well, when you did like the running mm-hmm. through walls and stuff, like you felt you were really busting through rock.
And again, this is one of the first games that has a fantastic soundtrack that's not necessarily like
bombastic main themes.
Or like it's not like super melodic. You know, like one of my favorite tunes is like that when you're in like those quarters, just like that. It's like so weird. Oh, it's so good.
Man, now I want to play Super Metroid.
Right? I just played it not too long ago. It came out on Wii U.
Good. Yeah, I have it on Wii U. That, right. It's a great way to play.
I mean, that whole thing basically, and I know there's two other Metroids before that, but this one like basically started that Metroidvania genre, which is like one of my favorite genres.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing, too. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Symphony of the Night is an incredible game. A lot of the other Castlevania is very good. Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yeah, incredible. That's my favorite recent one.
But no, I don't think any of them have done it better than Super Metroid.
It is kind of, even like the other 2D Metroid games we made since then, not quite as good as Super Metroid.
Yeah.
And then it's weird how that happened with Metroidvania, because it's almost true with the Castlevania games too, where Symphony of the Night is the best one. And they made a bunch more.
Right.
And they're all good, but yeah, I don't, yeah, but man, Super Metroid, that was a little bit later, I think. I think that was like, what, 95?
Five or four.
So it was a little bit later, but man. That and Link to the Past, like, I can play Super Mario Brothers 1 and 3 still. Link to the Past and Super Metroid, they're almost kind of spoilers for their predecessors. Like, playing the original Legend of Zelda or Metroid 1, yeah. I'm almost just kind of like, I'd rather
play Super Metroid or, yeah.
And there were, because those games kind of did feel just like big boy versions of those games, and there were a lot like that, like Super Castlevania 4.
Yeah, which it's just, like, better Castlevania.
And that's an example of going away from Nintendo for a bit, of just, like, of exclusives for that system where that were just awesome by other people. And Genesis had Bloodlines, which was good, but Super Castlevania 4 was cool. And this was an early game, too, and this one's doing some of the crazy stuff. I remember there's that room that's, like, it's spun. Cylinder, and it's spun, and then there's the other one, yeah, like, it was just all this Mode 7 nonsense, but it was so cool back then. It was, you know, just blowing us away.
Now, of course, the Super Nintendo was responsible for two big graphical shifts in gaming. Mm-hmm. The first one was Donkey Kong Country.
Right, and it wasn't necessarily that it was a 3D game, but its models were 3D.
It was a very clever thing to do, honestly, was to take these pre-rendered 3G characters and just convert them to the sprites. Right. I love when you read the book Console Wars, and you hear about the first time the guy who kind of spearheaded that project showed it to... Yoshida? Am I getting the name right?
I think so.
The president of NOA. And he thought he was looking at an early game for the Ultra 64. And he was like, oh, so are all the games going to look this good for the Ultra? And he's like, oh, no, this is the Super Nintendo still. And he was like, really?
Right. No, that was...
I mean, when you first saw that game in motion... Like,
it was a big deal.
It was mind-blowing.
It was a big deal, yeah.
It also helps that it is still, in fact, a good game.
Right. No, now, it's a great platformer.
You know, it's weird. Like, I feel like, even though, like Tropical Freeze and all those games, like, they've been solid. I feel like they have a really hard time advancing that game.
Well, this is like a whole nother thing. I feel like there are a few Nintendo franchises that are kind of sticking
stuck to there
a little bit, like that Kirby a little bit, the 2D Yoshi games, like they do, yeah, you know, they, exactly. But mm-hmm. but back then, this, not to get too much on modern Nintendo tangent.
Now, the other big graphical game that came out, which is one of my personal favorites, is Star Fox.
Because that was a big deal.
I mean, it was polygons.
It was a straight up 3D game. Yeah. It was on the Super Nintendo.
It was super low poly, but you could make out
what was happening and you could play it.
Because they designed to their limitations. Right. It was very brilliant design in that game. Everything from a design point of view supported the graphical limitations, so it didn't feel limited as you played the game.
And one of the kind of great, like, never released games either, I'm just saying about that, a Star Fox 2, which was apparently, like, almost done. You could play, like,
ROM. Yeah, you could get ROMs of it. I've never actually done that. I always... Right.
One of the things I liked, though, is, like, the big feature that was, like, that your Arwen could turn into a walker thing.
Is going
to
be in the new
one. And that's, like, in the new one, like, exact. If you look at the animation for it and compare it to what it is in this canceled game, it's, like, point on point. So I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. You think they should just, like, put that out on the Wii U Virtual Console? It'd be kind of interesting. Just for shits.
Dude, we haven't even got Mother 3 yet, so...
Yeah.
Someday, I suppose.
Okay, and then let's go down the RPG route.
Yeah, I was about to say, that was kind of the other big thing was, and maybe one thing that really helped with Sega. I mean, RPG-wise, Sega had the Phantasy Stars and maybe some other things.
Shining Force, there were Force games, right?
So there's things, but you had the full might of Square back in the day behind the Super Nintendo and some other companies doing things. Like Capcom with Breath of Fire or whatever. But the big ones were the Final Fantasy games.
Yeah. So we got 2 and 3, which were actually 4 and 6.
Right. And in Japan got 5.
So the only one I played at the time was 6. And we'll just go with the 3 Japanese names.
This was another... I think at the time when I would watch you play 3 and I would play 3, I thought that it was by far the most, like, epic, best storytelling, like, game I had ever seen.
Well, and it was interesting...
I never saw anything to that scale.
Even just from a story point of view, that the villain wins.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to deal with the aftermath of that. Because, like, that never happened. Mm-hmm. Even in, like, movies and stuff, that's rare.
I think it was also the first time where I, like, actively sought out the soundtrack for a game.
Yes. I remember downloading MP2 files
right?
from the Impresario web site.
Right. Because I remember just watching, like, that opening thing where they're walking through the snowstorm, and I'm like, I need that song.
Yeah.
And just incredible stuff. And that Opera House thing, was that blew me away as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to see that now, like, we went to the symphony, and, like, they actually play the opera, and they have, like, opera singers doing it. I'm like, this is
yeah, so that great. Was pretty rad.
This is so great.
That was pretty rad.
But, yeah, that was, like, a big deal back then. But besides that, then, like, the other big Square one was, and this was another kind of later one, was Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, which was them collaborating with Enix before they would merge.
Right, and this was the best-looking one, too, because this is, like, the sprites are huge, they all look great, the battle system was really cool.
Well, what made the battle system in this game cool and unique from any RPG ever played, the battles took place not on, like, a sub-screen, but just on the map, and your position mattered in those fights.
Yeah, because, yeah, you would do... Yeah, because there would be certain attacks that hurt people behind them. Then there would be attacks you could team up with your partners. That to me, is still, like... You could get a lot of what makes a good base JRPG out of Chrono Trigger, where you kind of... I feel like it's good to have, like, a small party where they're all, like, diverse, interesting characters. Not just for their personalities, but, like, for their attacks and stuff. And I like, still, that there's, like, a way they interact with each other outside of the story, like, in a game play sort of way. Mm-hmm. Like that. And again, just like another kind of fantastic music thing. And then, for me, kind of the third and like the trio of the great
yeah, JRPGs. Yeah, and my personal favorite, not the best one, right. but my personal favorite.
Super Mario RPG.
What a good game.
And that was the game that, like, really, because, like, Final Fantasy 3 I would play and I would watch it play a lot, but I was still kind of young for it.
Yeah, and I never actually beat it on my own. Actually, a friend of mine had it. We used to go over to his place, and he'd, like, play it, and we would all tell him what to do, and that's where I beat the game.
Right, but Super Mario RPG, and I'm, like, 10 yeah. here. I could play that. I played it. I beat that game. Mm-hmm. And it was, maybe it was a little separate, but it wasn't, like, dumbed down necessarily.
No. I mean, the big thing that it did to the combat was introducing the whole time-based
which
reactions.
So many things I've done now, which
including,
is great.
Like, Paper Mario Luigi,
well,
but other
but
games,
even,
too.
There are games, like the South Park games basically mm-hmm. just completely did that. The Penny Arcade games did that. Because it's fun, because it gives you a little more interactivity into turn-based battles.
But then, again, it did that kind of Donkey Kong Country thing with the graphics, like the kind of pre-rendered 3D characters.
Right.
But who would have thought you could make a compelling RPG story
right.
out of Mario?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it was super interesting. And again, it kind of had, like, you know, the JRPG, like, journey aspect to it. The original characters, Gino and Mallow, were awesome. And this was the first game, too, where... Really one of the first games where Peach was... Episodes were 2, where Peach was kind of, like, a playable, active character.
Yeah, she wasn't the damsel in
right.
distress.
And from 2, it was just because they were playing on top of some other game.
Right.
And then also the first one where Bowser was, like, the unlikely ally.
He was, like, your anti-hero in
right.
a weird way.
It was kind of the beginning of, like, Bowser as like a comedic character sometimes, which works so well for him.
Yeah.
And it was so great here. And they would do funny things, like Bowser would have an attack where he would literally just throw Mario because he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And do a lot of damage. It was great.
It always bothered me, though, that Luigi wasn't a playable character in that game.
Well, Luigi had a rough go of it for a bit here. He didn't show up in much of anything because he wasn't in 64 at all after this. For a little bit, they really de-emphasized Luigi, and then they brought him back. Because remember, Luigi's Mansion was a big deal because of that.
Yeah.
It's like, where the hell happened to Luigi?
He's fighting ghosts.
Yeah. But there were, like, references to him in there.
Yeah.
And it always bothered me a little bit that we never got, like, the sequel to this. Although, it spun off two different series.
Which are... combining,
yeah, right. Paper Mario, Mario Luigi, which were both great series and are now okay series.
Yeah,
they both have their own.
There.
Well, Paper Mario, they just like won't make another proper new one. They like Sticker Star was just weird and bad.
I think Mario Luigi's gotten too clever.
Mario Luigi, when I played the newest one, it's like when you're playing the game, it's fine, but. It's the hand holding is ridiculous. It's like every place you go to, there's like some new like mechanic that it hand holds you through, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah,
and I'm like, Jesus, just let me play or you know whatever. Yeah,
what I would give for just a straight up new Super Mario RPG,
like Super Mario RPG 2. Like,
put it on the Wii U. Make the graphics like top notch.
Right, imagine if it like looked as good as new Super Mario or Mario
3D World.
3D World, whatever.
That'd
be
amazing.
Oh man. Be all over.
I don't even know. You know what though? It can't even look like Super Mario 3D World because
not exactly. No,
because Super Mario RPG had a slightly distinctive art style.
Oh, it did. Well, and I think part of that was also just like early polygons.
I understand that, but if they could replicate that style in a modern way, that would be amazing.
It was also one of the first times we're really talking something about Mario RPG, but it was one of the first times we're like. The Mushroom Kingdom became more than just, like, a backdrop for these games.
It became an actual place.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
With people living there.
Right, exactly. I think it was one of the first times where I really picked up on Toads being, like, a race of people, not just one character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Toads were everywhere, which is, like, the thing. Oh, man. Yeah, I love that game. So, other Super Nintendo things. Again, Knopf's Party, Mega Man X.
Oh, my favorite Mega Man.
Not my favorite. It's a lot, people. It's definitely the best of... It's the best of the... 16-bit ones. It's the best one that's not 8-bit. How about that? Or meant to look like 8-bit.
Yeah, that's still my favorite straight up.
But, I love... this is one of the first games to do, like, the wall climbing thing where, like, you know, when you grab on, you're, like, sliding down.
Well, the wall climb and the dash were just so good. Getting around that game felt so good.
The problem was Mega Man 7 came after it, and it was like, okay.
I'm gonna do...
Yeah, right, yeah. It was, like, fine. But, yeah, the Mega Man X games were fantastic. And that's another series, too, where it never was quite better than the first one.
Yeah, I mean, 2 and 3 are fine. Four was cool because you got to play Zero.
Right, and then after that, I was like, okay. all right, everybody. And there are so many, just, you can go on and off on, like, Zombie Ate My Neighbors and just, like, random little weird things here and there.
Now, there were the handful of times when I think, and I'm often debated on with this, that the Super Nintendo was inferior to the Sega Genesis.
What way? Oh, just like certain like versions of games.
Yes,
this was weird because they would do this all the time where there'd be two separate. Like sometimes a game would just be straight up ported to both, but a lot of times it'd be two different games for like especially licensed games like Aladdin.
So the big one is Aladdin.
This is a
I will fight with my last dying breath to say that the Sega one's better, but a lot of people like that Super Nintendo one. Not that the Super Nintendo one's bad,
right?
I think, but now. You know what game was bad, and the Sega Genesis one was awesome.
Jurassic Park?
Yes. Yeah. Because you got to be the fucking Raptor, why.
Well, Super Nintendo was like a weird isometric game.
Yeah, that just was terrible.
That was always like, if it wasn't like a Zelda, if your game was isometric back then, I was usually a little wary of it.
Yeah.
Like, again, Zombie Ate My Neighbors was another one that was like, okay, but usually if it was isometric, it was like, what is this?
Yeah, we also had no blood in the Mortal Kombat series.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
You know, what was the point of that?
But yeah, but it, like, technically would, like, look better. I think, like, Street Fighter, you would rather play in Super Nintendo, right?
Yes and no. I still hate having attacks mapped to the trigger or shoulder buttons, and this Genesis had that six-button controller.
Well, if you had the six-button controller, then
which we did.
Yeah. Hey, you were golden. Then you were golden.
So I'm trying to think of what
I mean, there's, like, other weird... Remember Mario Paint?
Oh,
that's weird that
I remember
happen.
Mario Paint.
Weird that that happened.
I played a lot of Mario Paint.
Like that they released a game that came with a mouse pad.
A plastic mouse pad.
It was a special mouse pad.
I played a shit ton of Mario Paint. The Super Scope. God, we played a lot of the Super Scope.
But yeah. So it's kind of wraps up. So
Joe and Mac.
Joe and Mac.
That just popped in my head.
There's all these like little. Yeah, there's just some.
It's like, yeah, those kind of games you kind of forget about. But
that's why that's so great. Like, if you just list the obvious games, there's so many that are just. It blows me away. In terms of just like, yeah, like a game library. And back then, that's basically all it was because there wasn't all this other crap. It's just the game library. The only other one I can think of that maybe competes with it is PlayStation 2. Mm-hmm. To me, that's where the debate probably is PlayStation 2 or Super Nintendo.
I'd give it to Super Nintendo still.
I'd have to think about it more. So, but if we're saying which one is probably the best Super Metroid.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Super Metroid is fantastic. All right, you want to go to specials now?
Yeah.
I played through and beat Tomb Raider.
How is it?
I liked it a lot. Yeah. It was really good.
You have a disc copy?
Yeah. Do you not have it?
No.
Oh, well, go ahead then.
Hooray! Yeah.
But,
I saved $60.
Yeah, right? I saved $60. No, it was super fun. You know, and I liked the first one, too. The kind of like, you know, obviously that this owes a lot to Uncharted, which is fine, because Uncharted owes a lot to Tomb Raider. And I kind of equate it like Uncharted is a bit more like Last Crusade. This is a bit more like Temple of Doom, but this one maybe a little bit less. Like Tomb Raider 1 was almost so dreary and bloody and deathy and stabby. It was almost like unpleasant at times. Like they toned that down a bit. Like this is still like a scarier, like it's a more serious game. Like there's no quipping. Yeah. You know, whereas Nathan Drake will be like, oh, that doesn't look good, oh. Like, Lauren Croft will be like, oh, God, no, oh, God, why? Right? Like stuff like that. It's like, it's funny how, because there's a lot, basically, it's almost the same kind of adventure. It's just, like, the way they react to it.
Attitude.
Right, just makes it completely different. And it's funny how there are a lot of similarities to Uncharted 2 here. Like, some I can't give away. Obviously, you know, there's, like, a predominantly snowy area. Mm-hmm. So the snow effects are great. Especially when she's, like, walking through the snow and stuff. Very good-looking game. It's one of the few games, too, that's like, it doesn't run at 60 frames per second, but it kind of works like that for this one. I think the other big difference is, like, the kind of semi-open-world nature, where basically there's, like, all these little areas. Like, not little areas, but, like, you know, the map is segmented. And some of them are big open areas, and they'll have, like, a lot of optional things to do. And a lot of times, some of them are just really more linear areas, almost more like an Uncharted. But the best thing in this game is, to me, is the optional tombs that you can go through.
Yeah, that's what everyone keeps saying.
Because the one thing that this series does better than Uncharted, and it pains me to say that, is, like, the puzzles like that. Because there's a bit of, like, a Metroidvania or even, like, Zelda thing where she has items that she uses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these different ropes and arrows and things. So she can solve puzzles then. Whereas Drake, in an Uncharted game, when you're solving a puzzle, it's usually looking in your diary and matching things.
Mm-hmm.
Or your journal, excuse me. But this one, there's, you know, there's all these neat things. And each tomb has, like, its own story and identity, or its old, like, this is what this was. Plus, when you beat the tombs, I think in the last one you got, like, weapon parts. This time you get a new skill. Like, you can level up and earn skills, but there's also special ones you can only get for doing
these. Oh, so you're gonna do these.
Right. Oh, there's no reason
not to. You say they're optional, but you're gonna do these.
Oh, you want to. Well, they're best part, again, they're the best part of the game anyways. They're super fun. They're super, they're a lot of fun. But, I thought the whole game was a lot of fun. I liked it a lot. I thought it was better than the other one, more memorable, smooth game.
I'm excited to play it now.
My only complaint, and sometimes it felt kind of easy.
Yeah.
A lot of times it felt easy. I know it's not a big one, but I mean, maybe the last fight, like so much of it is, like, trying to find ammo and crafting ammo. I never ran out of ammo. I ran out of ammo one time in the very last fight. Like, the very last fight was where I felt like it was maybe where the challenge should have been.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're saying, well, just bump up the difficulty. But then, like, I'm playing, like, another game where I'm trying to find the right difficulty for me,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's
and
bad.
It's like, right. When I'm playing a game for the first time, I was going to play it normal. But, no, Tomb Raider was a lot of fun. I think if you like those kind of I always want to call them adventure games, even though to me an adventure game is like
a different thing.
Yeah.
Well, action adventure game,
sure.
So you want to talk real quick about the Battle of Jakku
in Star Wars Battlefront? Sure, new map.
So I watched you and Jeff's stream of it, and you two guys were killing me because you're like, oh, like, do you see that Star Destroyer crash? I guess not. That would have been cool. Ha ha ha. Meanwhile, you guys never turn around to see a Super Star Destroyer fall out of the sky and crash. I mean, it's just like a skybox thing, but like when it hits, the ground shakes and you see this huge, first like a rush of sand flies in the air and then a huge pillar of smoke. Like it's Very cool. So
I missed that.
The map, like you've said before, if it weren't for all the debris and everything, and you told me this was Tatooine, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, but it's smart that they do that.
Yeah, so it's basically just like a huge vehicle graveyard, like X-Wings and AT-ATs. Yeah, that's cool. And like, it's neat because it's very open, but you have these neat little cubbies you can hide and take cover.
Yeah. Did you play the new mode?
Yes.
It didn't do a whole lot for me.
I like it, actually. So the way it works is you have, like, waves of capture points. You could choose, like, first there's three, you just need one of them. Then there's three more, then there's two, and then there's one.
Right.
The problem is, when you get down to that last one, it becomes impossible for the Rebels. Because now just the Empire are spawning right near that point.
They are very bad with...
balance.
Yeah.
So I
still haven't played a game of Walker Assault that the
Empire's won.
Not in a while. Yeah.
So I just treat the mode like kind of just a huge big scale team deathmatch, basically.
Right.
Which is what it kind of is, because there's no heroes. The only vehicles that come into play are air speeders and AT-STs.
Right.
And like I said, it's a cool map because it is so open, but there are cover points you could take to move around. I think it's
fine, but again, I'd rather just play Walker Assault.
And is Turning Point in the other maps?
I don't know. It's not.
Which is odd. I don't see why not.
No.
Use that Endor map, man. That map's
that one might actually work for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't played Walker Assault on the new map.
I did. But it was fun. I had a great game with Walker Assault because I had two runs on the X-Wing. I was doing good, and then I got Luke right when there was like a choke point section, so yeah, I was just going down there. And
we were playing the other night, we were doing more of the hero versus hero mode, which has really grown on me.
Yeah, it's
but
fun.
But you have to be playing it with friends.
Yeah.
It's no fun to just jump into that at random, really. No. But when you're playing with a group of friends, you can actually say, like, okay, like, Leia, you set up your bubble here, and we'll come back to you for heals, and,
right,
you know, stuff like that. Like, you actually coordinate. Super fun. Super right. Good time.
Exactly. I beat Fallout 4.
Yeah, I finished the Silver Shroud side quest, which is my new favorite Bethesda side
quest.
That was such a fun quest.
I think even Ally beat it, that was my favorite part of the whole game.
Yeah, like, so if you're playing Fallout, I won't spoil it, but if you haven't done the Silver Shroud quest yet, go to the town of Good Neighbor. If you haven't been there yet, you will. And just go to your radio and tune into Silver Shroud Radio until you get a quest.
Well, I didn't get
and listen to the radio station,
if you don't get the quest, which I did, just go to the Memory Den and find a ghoul there and talk to him, yeah.
Yes.
But, yeah, that was my favorite quest.
Super fun.
That was fun.
Super fun.
But I got to, like, a point where I always do these games where I sense the end was near. I'm like, all
right,
enough.
Yeah, because you're not going to go back and play any more Savage. You're done, right?
I usually am.
See, that's the thing. I mean, like, Fallout 3, my God, I just wandered around and played that game for a year.
Especially at that, like, right then, because, like, I had Tomb Raider next, and I wanted to play it, so bad. I was like, I kind of want to play Tomb Raider, but I make sure I beat games now, which is, I beat so many games now. Because I just don't let myself play a game until I beat one. It's great. I don't know what I didn't beat this year that I played. Now I
wish it was my job to play video games.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, Fall 4 is good. It's like, there are complaints about it that I think are valid.
Yeah, I was going to say, like everyone, the kind of thing everyone's on now is, it's a good game, just not a good Fallout game.
Well, I don't know about if I necessarily pick up, like,
well, like,
that.
Like you mentioned this, like in Fallout 3, if you have, like, a high intelligence stat, you can have intelligence options in conversation. Like, that's kind
of good. I do think the actual role-playing has taken a bit of a hit.
Yeah, it's become more of, like, an action role-playing
game,
I'd say.
And, yeah,
which is okay.
I have no problem with it. It's still good, but, yeah, like, the dialogue system, like, the choices, so many times it's like, there are all these things. What you're really saying is yes, 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 no, parentheses, yes. That's like, I saw a picture. Like, it all actually leads to the same place.
Right, right.
With no difference. Like, the big difference is, like, maybe your partner will like what you said or not.
Right.
Wait, yeah, so, and that's what, Dragon Age did, instead of having a morality system, it was just all partner-based. But in that game, you would have your partners were much more important.
Well, yeah, party, not
yeah,
just a partner.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, having them like you was much more important than just, like, you know, maybe Piper likes me or not, whatever.
Like, I'll get her
skill.
Anyway.
Yeah, I'll get a skill. Or I could just not need her, yeah. But yeah, I do kind of miss... I don't know if they made another one, if I'd really necessarily need the whole voice character thing. Because it was kind of... Because it never felt like... In Fallout 3, I felt like I was playing as myself. I never felt like I was playing as myself. I felt like I was playing as this guy who had his distinct voice and his distinct mission and role and stuff, and, you know, he was doing his thing, and I would sometimes choose what he said out of an option of three other similar things.
I would be surprised in the somewhat unlikely event that there is, like, a New Vegas to this game, that it doesn't revert back to that old dialogue system.
Yeah, I think it... Well, because New Vegas... Because Obsidian has, more so than Bethesda, a lot of people who worked on...
Yeah, they had a lot of Black Isle guys.
Because that's where it came from, was Black Isle. So in a lot of ways, New Vegas is even more like the original Fallouts than Fallout 3 was, right? So I actually would really like if they did, right? But the problem is Obsidian has so much of their own things going on now.
I don't think Obsidian would be the one to do it, but somebody.
Yeah, I don't know if I would want it if it wasn't Obsidian, really.
Well, I mean, a lot of those guys now, too, are even... You know, they're doing all the Kickstarter RPGs that are the hotness now. Pillars of Eternity and...
Well, Lorien
whatchamacallit.
Well,
the one that...
Well, Pillars isn't... Which one is actually Obsidian?
They are Wasteland 2 and... No.
That's Larian.
No.
I think Pillars is Obsidian. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. Riot Fargo and Exile are Wasteland 2.
That's right. There's In Exile, there's Larian games, and then there's... I think Larian...
Larian's Divinity.
That's Divinity. Yeah, Bright Fargo's Wasteland and Bard's Tale and all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Is that it?
I think so.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. You can find more of us at ebpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Be sure to go to the iTunes Music Store and leave us a review. We always appreciate that. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week right here on the Exploding Real Podcast.
Bye-bye.